Welcome to a new episode of Africa with Andre, where we celebrate Africa one story at a time.
When friends ask me, "I'm going to South Africa, what should I do?" I almost always start with, "Do yourself a favor and start with 2 nights in Johannesburg." After the usual shocked look, I explain that Joburg might have a bad reputation from many years ago, but that a visit to this dynamic city is an eye-opener. I suggest they spend at least 3 hours at the Apartheid Museum, yep, 3 hours, and then do a cycle tour in Soweto. Today we're chatting to Maria Malepa from Lebo's Backpacker and Cycle Tours in Soweto. Hi Maria, it's good to have you here.
Hi Andre, and hi to the listeners. Great to be here. What an opportunity. Thank you.
Briefly, for those people who don't know Soweto, give us a description of the township, or actually a city now, near Johannesburg where you are.
First of all, I'm not born in Soweto. I'm actually from Sweden, but I came here many years ago and I married Lebo, who's the founder of Lebo's Backpackers. But Soweto is definitely my home now. And yeah, as you correctly say, it's actually a city. And you know, the word township, internationally, when people try and translate it, it always become whatever word in your language that would translate in some form of a shanty town or an extremely kind of poor slum or something like that. That has always been the challenge that we have to work against when we say that tourists should come to Soweto, because then people think that, oh, it's some form of a slum tourism experience. And the ones who come for the slum tourism experience, they get to be disappointed, because Soweto represents South Africa and Johannesburg in so many ways in terms of inequality. But we're not here to showcase that in that type of way.
Soweto has everything from corrugated iron shacks all the way up to massive houses. So it really has everything.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the ones that are, you know, brave enough to kind of come and explore despite its reputation, they are so happy that they did. Soweto, it's an abbreviation of Southwestern Townships. It was an area that was created by the apartheid government during the time of forced removals from the inner city. Where they wanted to divide people according to their racial belongings. And African people in particular were then forced removed to various sections that then made up Soweto. So that's southwest of the city center of Johannesburg. That's why it's called that. And I mean, it's 200 square kilometers in its size, and subsections of Soweto is over 40 different.
It is an area that is mostly inhabited by Blacks or Africans in the country. You're one of the few white people that live there. I think that's traditionally not the population that's lived there because of what apartheid created in the country, and which is one of the reasons why it's so important for guests to visit Soweto, in my opinion.
Yeah. Sadly, even 30 plus years into democracy, what apartheid did, it really stuck through generations. Obviously, in terms of the type of opportunities, both in terms of education and financial opportunities that people had or did not have during apartheid. And that is still very visible. So Soweto still is home to the working class and partly a little bit middle class, people that have gotten better opportunities, but that have decided to still stay in Soweto. But it has been very difficult for the South African population as a whole to start integrating and mixing in various areas of living. It's still very much segregated.
The business that I call Lebo's, which is what you're running, was started by your late husband. I think Lebo himself passed away during COVID, and I'm happy to see that the business is continuing in your hands. Give us a brief background to how the business started.
So that was before I met Lebo. I wasn't there personally, but obviously having been married and lived with Lebo and been running the business with him for most of the years of its existence, I know the ins and outs of his story. It was such a gradual, organic growth where he didn't sit down and drew up a business plan or said that, you know, I'm going to start a tourism hub or a business in Soweto. Instead, he grabbed various opportunities that were there as a young Sowetan, being the generation that had been closed off from many opportunities doing most of his schooling during apartheid. So in the early 2000s, when he was in his late 20s, he started selling craft at the Hector Peterson Memorial Site, which is the commemoration site and today also a museum of the student uprisings that happened there in 1976. And that was just by grabbing an opportunity of making an income, wanting to do something in terms of offering something in Soweto. Tourism was really not on people's mind.
No one considered going to Soweto for tourism at that stage.
Well, they were. This was early 2000s, so they were, but absolutely not in the same scale as today. That's why I'm saying it wasn't really on people's minds, especially like young Sowetans wanting to start whatever entrepreneurial projects or seeking job opportunities. But Lebo saw early that there is something happening. And then him and a few friends started putting up market stalls by those few sites where tourists did come. I mean, it was kind of a drive-through type of experience that people were offered then. So it was the Mandela House and the memorial site, for example, for Hector Peterson. People were even warned to go out of their buses, guided by white tourist guides, definitely not from Soweto. And yeah, and then Lebo kind of started his entrepreneurial journey seeing this and getting very frustrated, but then turning that frustration into, what can we do as the people of Soweto? Can we meet these travelers and tell our own story? And that's really how it sparked.
Okay.
He was lucky to have a household, and there were a few other family members living there. He lived with his younger brother, but then he could eventually actually turn that home into what was first called a homestay. So he had one or two rooms. He offered people a night's sleep. He could take them on walking tours. He then started arranging soccer tournaments. He got into contact with especially the French expat community. And then that just grew and grew. In 2005, the business was registered. And that's when some of the first cycle tours started. I met Lebo in 2005. And then when I eventually moved in 2007, it was just the two of us running the operations. And then slowly but surely, we started employing a few people. And yeah, that's how it started.
Let's talk about the cycle tour in particular, because that's what I really love. And you, I know that you offer a 2-hour tour and a 4-hour tour. And before anyone decides, I need to do the shorter tour, please do the 4-hour tour, because...
Or the full day. We have a full day.
You have a full day one as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Okay. Well, the longer tour is better, because I think people, when they hear a cycle tour, they think, oh, I have to sit in a saddle for 4 hours or a whole day. But you get off and chat so much and walk around here and there. So the 2-hour tour for me is too short. But tell us about what clients do and see on these tours.
Absolutely. So obviously we start at our Backpackers Lodge, which is situated in Orlando West. So we're not too far from some of the most iconic sites like the Mandela House, Villa Gaza Street, and the Hector Peterson Memorial. So a very kind of ordinary neighborhood. So you would start there and we cycle to our campsite, which was one of the latest projects that Lebo took on before the pandemic broke out, and also he eventually left us. So we cycle over there, which is really just across the road, and it has a little hill that we climb up on and where you get a panoramic view over large parts of Soweto. So that gives you a very nice introduction to who we are as a business, as a project, and also paying tribute to Lebo and also the history of Soweto. And then we start touring the various areas. We have close by a former migrant workers' hostel. So workers' hostels were created again during the apartheid era and during the gold rush of the mining industry in Johannesburg, where migrant labor came in from both rural areas and also from neighboring countries. And they would then housed in so-called hostels throughout Soweto. And this is one of them, but that has today been repurposed to house families. It is, however, an area that has been neglected in terms of development. So we do show that side as well. And we work with different organizations in this area to showcase that.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, and then we also visit an area called Meadowlands. So Meadowlands was known in the mid-1950s of being the area where a large part of the African population were forcibly removed to, because one of the areas in Johannesburg called Sophiatown was literally destroyed and bulldozed by the apartheid government. And then we move closer to the historical sites. So it's really a mix of understanding the neighborhoods, meeting people in a natural way as you cycle, And then from there, learning more about the history and seeing Nelson Mandela's house and various museums and commemoration sites.
Yeah.
When we do the full day, we also venture into the neighboring township called Orlando East, which was one of the first townships that was developed when Soweto started. We go all the way to our so-called Twin Towers of Soweto. That's an old coal power station that supplied electricity not to Soweto, but to Johannesburg in the 70s and 80s. Instead, it just put a big coal cloud over Soweto, but no electricity. But it was closed as an active site.
They do bungee jumping there now, right?
Yeah, there's an adventure site there. So you can do bungee jumping and various activities. Yeah, so that's a little bit of what you get to see.
We had a great time with the guide, talking not only about the touristy things, but also just genuine personal conversations. How do you find these young men and women that do the guiding? How do you train them?
Basically, we don't have any of our guides that were fully trained or experienced guides before they started working with us. We try and identify student guides or tourism students that have an interest in learning more about the industry and want to do it through the perspective of Lebo's backpackers. We offer them on-the-job training. We also had our own in-house training program where we used one of our, you know, senior guide colleagues that have been working with us for a long time to take them through everything that has to do with the business and history. And yeah, really just from the bottom up. A lot of people, they come to us. Lebo's is a brand now in the tourism industry. Many young people aspire to work with us. And that's not only the guides, because, I mean, Lebo's Backpackers employ about 30 plus people. And that's obviously reception, our kitchen staff, housekeeping, and yeah, our maintenance department, everything, you know, that makes up a lodge and a tourism business. Our aim is always to provide opportunities for young people, for them to train on the job and to learn.
Yeah. You just mentioned the backpackers. Obviously, we're chatting about the cycle tour, but tell us briefly, what else do you offer apart from the cycle tours? You've got a backpackers, so like a backpackers or guest house with a couple of rooms?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we offer about 22 beds, which is spread across two properties. It's the original home of Lebo, which is his great grandparents' house, and it's still a family home. Then we have an additional property, which is just right next door. Mm-hmm. So we've managed to create both shared dormitories and also private rooms. And then we have a beautiful big park just across the street. And that park is very much part of how the business started, because it used to be a dump site. When Lebo realized that he wanted to host travelers in his home, he said that there's no way I'm going to do that with trash on my doorstep. Sure. Lebo was just always also like a community builder and someone who just wanted to see the betterment for his community. So he saw that by creating a business right here in my home neighborhood, it can actually improve the conditions for my own people. Then he started cleaning up together with especially youth in the area. He started planting trees. And then as the business grew, we just made it an extension.
That's where we had lunch, isn't it?
Yes, yes, exactly. So we call it our outdoor restaurant. So we cook traditional food in those traditional cast iron pots that you put over fire.
Yeah.
You know, we do a very typical Soweto braai, which is a barbecue, you know, that I think is just loved across the world. We created a little oasis for ourselves. It's a lush kind of semi-tropical garden area with this traditional kind of lapas, as we call them. It's like grass umbrellas that you sit under.
Yeah, it was a great environment to sit and have lunch.
And with tours, we do tuk-tuk tours as well. We do the walking tours. Oh. And with the food offering now, we also offer people to come and cook with us. So they cook with our chef. They get to learn more about South African and Soweto food history. Because we also have our own food garden, people come with us and pick whatever herbs or veggies that are ready to be harvested for the day. And then we cook a meal together.
That's becoming more and more popular. That's very cool. To those listeners who are thinking, but is it safe for me to cycle through Soweto? I mean, the townships are dangerous. This is what people have heard throughout their lives. What do you say to those people who say, but is it safe?
Yeah, so that's the question that we've been answering for about 20 years. I was just reflecting on that ahead of this interview, that it's amazing that certain perceptions persist over such a long period of time. We adapt to so many other things in a fingersnap, you know. Yeah. If we were to talk about which technology we used 15 years ago and then compared to today, we've developed so much. And yet when it comes to certain perceptions of areas of the world, countries, continents, regions, people, we get to be so stuck in I would say, even ancient, you know, perceptions. So I think I just want to start off there, because I would have loved to not have to answer that question, having lived here now for 18 years and being part of the growth, to answer the question, yes, it's safe. Because what also makes it safe and authentic and absolutely not the type of slum and poverty tourism that some people think it is that you come and visit us in our home. You know, you get to be guided by someone who's going to take you through his or her neighborhood. Once you are with someone who is from that area and know the people, automatically you feel safe.
Yeah.
Of course, if our business model was more invasive, you know, that we're just here to make money, and we just come into an area that we don't even know, and we just want to kind of use people's culture and lifestyle of just making it into a product, then maybe it wouldn't be safe, because people wouldn't be happy with that. But it wouldn't be safe because the area is not safe. It wouldn't be safe because it would be so not authentic and not considerate to the people and the culture. But because we are, and we're integrated with the community, then automatically it's safe.
That brings me to the next question that I actually had. Whenever I've suggested to people to do a tour of the townships, people say, but I don't want to be a voyeur. I don't want to feel like I'm, you know, do the people want me there? I can't just drive through there or walk through there and look at people's houses. How do you address those questions? I'm sure you have that as well.
I think it's just that we have developed an experience that is based on welcoming people into a part of the world that you're not necessarily from. We want to build bridges, right? We want to create an understanding between cultures and between different countries, or even, you know, locally to other South Africans. We want to also be part of unifying our country by coming in an area that maybe you're not necessarily from, or seeing your own area from a different perspective. It's really just about exploring and experiencing.
Yep.
And we don't want to really go and visit people's homes unless we get an invitation. Because sometimes we do get that question from tourists to say, oh, can we visit someone's home? Can we go to a school? But we can't just do that. Awesome. You know, maybe one of our guides can still invite you to his or her home if he or she is comfortable with that. But we are also not invasive, and we don't want to do that, because I think that if you're from France or Germany or Sweden, would you do that in your own country? And often the answer is no. But some people have the perception that when you come to an African country, you can just go and view people's, you know, living conditions. Our cycle tours is very much on the ground. We cycle, we stop, we engage with people. We support local businesses, the street markets, the local little eateries. And I think that that makes the difference.
Just to go back to your comment on, you'd hoped you didn't have to answer this question anymore about it being safe. I've realized that people have a very long memory when it comes to anything negative to do with Africa. I think if something happens in a city like Berlin or Paris, people say, okay, that was bad. And the next year they're traveling back there. But for some reason, we have a very long negative memory of Africa, which is one of the reasons why it's taken so long for people to get over this whole is it safe issue with a place like Soweto.
I mean, I think actually also there's a Western narrative before even being exposed to any type of news of a continent like Africa. There is already a negative perception. And so Africa is always the underdog. Africa is always the one who starts, you know, 50 meters behind in a race than anyone else, almost.
That's true.
So we constantly chasing to get there in front, and we're giving, you know, unequal opportunity.
Maria, can you give us one or two funny or heartwarming stories from yourself or your guides?
Well, there's always a heartwarming story, I think, on our experiences. But I think it's just that if you do give yourself time to really come and stay and do the longer tour, there's definitely going to be quite a few things that will happen during your stay that you did not anticipate. I mean, you know how us Europeans are. We want to know everything beforehand and what's the schedule and how long time are we spending at each stop and what's the story there and what's the experience. But when you come here, if you don't have an open mind, you're going to lose out, because then all of a sudden, you know, we cycle through a certain neighborhood and let's say it's a Saturday, it will be a lot of different community events. So, for example, not long ago, there was a wedding. And then they cycle through there. That's not our stop to go there. But then people were just like, no, come, come, join our wedding. And then all of a sudden, you know, the whole tour is invited into a wedding. And, you know, and then they get to be part of the singing and be part of the celebrations. And where else would that happen? Not in many other places, because this is really more of a life-changing experience and just putting yourself out there and immersing yourself with the environment around you. And if you do that, you'll have such experiences.
You've actually mentioned what a couple of the people that I've interviewed have said. When you come to South Africa or Africa, just go with the flow and don't plan every minute. You have amazing experiences when you just let it happen. I like to end my interviews with questions about favorites. Who's your favorite South African person and why?
It's not an easy one, but I think the way I feel today or currently, I'm going to go with a very inspirational person to me. She is no longer alive, but it's Miriam Makeba. She was our giant activist, singer, performer, a feminist, and really someone who stood up for her country through her arts. And I think her music is timeless, and her passion for what she was doing and her passion for not only South Africa, but Africa as a continent is something that is inspiring. Yeah,
she's amazing. Maria, thank you very much for your time and thank you for chatting to us today.
Thank you, Andre. It was a pleasure.
And I hope that I have managed to inspire you, dear listeners, to see more of South Africa and to include Soweto in your travel plans. Today we spoke to Maria about her life in Soweto, running Lebo's backpackers and cycle tours that she ran together with her husband, Lebo. Everyone that has done the cycle tour in Soweto has told me how glad they are that they did it. What I find so important about it is that it helps you understand the history of South Africa and that it helps explain why people in South Africa interact with each other in the way that they do. I would love to hear from you. If you have ideas of who else you'd like to hear on this podcast, send me an email on podcast@africawithandre.com, and see you next time.